Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 248 for comics originally released on May 9th, 2012. Now, starting us off in DC is Green Lantern number 9. Now, this is by Jeff Johns, art by Doug Monkey and Christian Alamy. Good creative team. I mean, Jeff Johns has been doing great work on Green Lantern for a while. And I have polarized views on this issue. I'm not going to say mixed. I think they're very split on kind of both sides. You know, on the one hand, this was a good issue. We get a lot of information about the Indigo Tribe, as promised in this issue. Their origin, how they connect with Abin Sur, all that stuff's kind of made clear. But it was very heavy with expository dialogue to do that. And we've been wondering about, or at least I've been wondering about, the Indigo Tribe since they were introduced a year or two back in Blackest Night and leading up to that. So when we kind of get to this point and the mystery of the Indigo Tribe is kind of almost handed to us on a silver platter of, you know, here's the answer. It's like, there are a few things that, okay, we're kind of hinted at, you know, and stuff like that, but it didn't seem like something we could have uncovered, and it was just, boom, here it is. I would have liked less exposition in the reveal. I mean, how did you feel on that?
I don't know. I liked it. You know, I've been liking these last couple of issues. I had mixed feelings about some of the earlier issues of this Green Lantern relaunch, just because that first arc seemed to kind of drag, like most of the first arcs. It seemed like, you know, they're picking up the pace a little bit now. Maybe mm-hmm. they actually noticed the feedback, like dragging their feet a lot on a lot of these stories. I didn't mind it. You know, it's...
But, I mean, do you think it was kind of, you know, we've waited this long to get much of anything about the Indigo Tribe, and then it's just kind of, in the span of this issue, just kind of, oh, and here it is, you know?
I actually like the fact that they didn't drag it out over multiple issues, because, you know, that was kind of my, you know, let's get to the point and move on with the story, because the kind of cliffhanger, I'll call it, at the end of the episode tells me that there's probably going to be some big happenings next issue, and I'm glad to be getting to that, and then we can move on, as opposed to them dribbling out this information over another three issues or something.
Well, I guess I agree with what you're saying, but my point wasn't should they have dribbled it out over further issues and decompressed it further, but it seemed like they'd finally just gotten tired of stalling on telling us the backstory and just kind of here it is, whereas they've had the previous 2 years or so.
Yeah, that's true.
To be dribbling it out over that time. I mean, there's still the dribbling out versus the here it is. Because, I totally am feeling, you know, where you're at and stuff on the decompression and stuff like that. Because I would divide this issue into three key components. The modern day stuff, which is exposition heavy. The flashback stuff with Sinestro and stuff, which I thought was pretty good, and I liked that. And then that one-page, almost non-sequitur stuff in this issue, which goes towards, you know, what they've been doing on the arc, with the Guardians interrogating Starstorm. And in the span of this one issue, that page is like, where did this come from, where is this going, and why should I care? And they seem to be doing that in small enough installments that it's not, that plot line is not really building up much momentum for me. I mean, is that part working better for you?
It worked fine for me. You know, the part that I will comment on that seemed a little strange to me in the context of at least the DC books that I'm reading mm-hmm. is this Green Lantern story is mostly chapter and verse referring to everything from seems like Blackest Night and Sinestro Corps War and everything like that happened pretty much as I remember it, you know, whereas I don't get that feeling from any other DC book. I get the feeling from most other DC books that I'm reading that before the reboot, none of that other stuff ever happened.
Oh, I'm not getting that impression at all. I'm getting actually a little confused as to what the people at DC think happened. But I think they're in a similar state to how they were post-Crisis on Infinite Earths, where you had certain things that could not possibly have happened based on things they've taken out of the timeline and stuff, and we've got that kind of here. Clearly, any story that hinges on the Kal-El Superboy, you know, the clone and stuff, could not have happened how we saw it, because he's just now meeting, you know, Tim Drake and the other Titans, you know, characters of the varying ages. In all of those characters, a lot of their backstory is kind of different. But Flash, Green Lantern, Superman, Batman, a lot of the high plot point items, you know, Batman getting his back broken, him dying, Superman dying and coming back, all of that has been referenced in, and has happened in some way.
I know that, but I just don't get the feeling like it really happened. I get more of the feeling in those books, like especially Batman, like they're referring to that stuff as though it happened, but that stuff happened over such a protracted period of time, I don't see how it really could have been fit into the last 5 years.
Oh, and no. I completely agree with that.
Green Lantern, since everything they're mostly referring to actually did happen in the last 5 years, you know, it's just like I don't get that that disconcerting feeling. You know what I mean? It's just the Green Lantern stuff, it all actually has happened relatively recently.
Well, it's one of the few books that's really picking up on a lot of the strong plot lines from before Flashpoint. Whereas a lot of things may be referencing stuff and trying to allude to the backstory. But clearly, a lot of what we've seen, you know, or a lot of what had happened with Superman could not have happened the same way, given Supergirl just showed up on Earth, Superboy's just, you know, been cloned, all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like all the Superman stuff that's happened in the last couple of years, you know, with the new Krypton and just like almost everything, that stuff's all out the window, you know.
Well, that's the thing, is it's not all out the window. It's now a warped reflection of it.
Right, at one but point, I mean, to me, it's like it couldn't have happened the way that it did, whereas I feel like Blackest Night and the Sinestro Corps War pretty much could have happened as written without being some through a funhouse mirror kind of version of it.
A lot of it could have, a lot of it simply could not have. We've got no Justice Society, we have no Titans, things of that aspect. I mean, there are parts of the Sinestro Corps that simply could not have happened. Were they important parts? Eh, probably not, you know, for the most part, but it comes down to there were two issues back in the day of Daring New Adventures of Supergirl where the new and improved Doom Patrol showed up. This was back when it was Tempest, Negative Woman, Robot Man, and I forget who the other member was. And that was later referenced as having happened, not with Supergirl, but with Power Girl. So that's the kind of thing where in some cases they want to have their cake and eat it too, where they want to have had these things have happened. Clearly, they could not have happened exactly as we saw them because they've unraveled parts of the tapestry. But they don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and you know, ignore it whole cloth. And they're in a very dicey situation, which I was afraid they could easily get into. I mean, we talked about this, I think, about a year ago, where, you know, when we found out they were going to be doing the reboot and all of that stuff, of, you know, can they maintain a cohesive narrative? I mean, we knew early on that Green Lantern and the Batman books were going to undergo the least kind of changes and have the strongest pre-Flashpoint, post-Flashpoint kind of ties, which is certainly, I think, very strong here in this book, less so with some of the other Green Lantern books and even the Batman books, and in certain cases with other titles completely out the window. But it's not that those other stories simply did not happen. They happened at a high level, as we know, but not as we remember.
Right.
And
so
that's the danger with reboots.
I'm not arguing the, you know, kind of scholarly point here. You know, it's like, and I'll give you everything that you said. I'm just saying, to me, just reading the stuff, it feels like the Green Lantern stuff happened pretty much as written, and the other stuff didn't.
Well,
it's just my own personal perception of it. I just, the other stuff just seems like there was a break, and you know,
there was Flash,
and you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just,
and this is the book that was the least broken, and therefore needed the least fixing.
Right.
So this is the one again that has the strongest through line of narrative threads before and after, and that's, I think, part of why. I mean, certainly for myself, and I would argue for you too, it's been hard to connect with certain books because they're kind of the same characters, but they're also definitely not. And I think DC has kind of weathered that storm surprisingly well. But it's one of those where they've, again, they fixed enough stuff that whether they're telling us stuff happened or not, it, like you said, it doesn't feel like it did. And, you know, for the first year or so, you got to figure there's going to be, during the first story arc or two, some bumps in the road, whatever. I don't think we've hit anything like we hit post-crisis, where origins of various people like the Guardians of the Galaxy or Hawkman or whatever seem to change, like, on a monthly basis, almost. They've had some cohesiveness within the new universe, just in and of itself, for the most part. The question's going to be how people feel a year from now, 2 years from now, going forward. Will they have made this new universe? Will they have gotten us to know these characters and their backstory and stuff like that to feel like they're kind of the quote-unquote real versions now? And we'll see if that happens. You know, for me, this is one of those that, because they're trying to bridge pre-Flashpoint to post-Flashpoint with the Indigo Tribe, you know, referencing very heavily things that were happening with Blackest Night and, like you said, the last 5 years or so of Green Lantern stories, yet we know not a lot, but key aspects of certain stories. Let me be careful how I phrase this. Aspects, probably not key aspects, though, of certain stories like Blackest Night and, you know, Sinestro Corps War and stuff like that could not possibly have happened the way we saw them, but at least in this book, that feels as if it doesn't really matter, because that backstory has remained fairly intact, or intact enough, because they haven't taken key characters like they have over in the Superman family and the Batman family and just totally redone their backstory.
Right. I would agree with it stated as that. That's reasonable.
I do think DC is in a precarious position if they are not careful. If they cannot build up and solidify the backstory on the characters to get the readers to kind of take ownership and adopt these characters, you know, it's not a well they can go back to. They can't reboot the timeline again and again and again. Although, I'm sure somebody listening to this right now is thinking, but they have! And I'd be hard-pressed to deny that.
Well, I mean, it's just, what's the time separation? You know, if it's like 10 years apart, you know.
I think it was 20, five, then 10, yeah. Then 5, then,
yeah.
You know.
So if it's like having each time that we've got 2.5 years until the next one, then a year and 3 months, you know. And
yeah.
Then it'll just be a new reboot every month.
All new number ones all the time. Scary thought. I guess for me, this was a good issue, but it was a very clear middle chapter of a story. Not a great jumping on point, nor did it claim to be. And, you know, as far as, you know, middle chapter type stuff goes, it was a little above average, but not by much. So for me, very much a, you know, a 3 out of 5.
I liked it a little bit more than that. I gave it a 4 out of 5. I really liked the twist that they put in on the resolution and the whole deal with the Indigo Tribe. So I'll give them the 4 on this one.
I think if I had read this story sooner after Blackest Night and the Who is the Indigo Tribe was feeling more relevant to me, that would have helped.
Fair enough. So let's move over to Avenging Spider-Man number 7. This is the second issue since I've been rebuying this. I also got number 6 with that Daredevil Punisher crossover.
Yeah, you were mentioning, you know, that before we were recording or whatever, that you were comparing this to kind of the old Marvel team-up and stuff. I think that's a very apt comparison. And I'm all for kind of a light, fun, you know, action-adventure kind of done in one book. And I think we're going to have slightly different opinions on this, because I think this was all of it. I think it was a decent read. But, like, man, the plot was next to non-existent. You know,
yeah, I won't disagree with you on that. I kind of like the one-shot done in one thing better than the kind of dragging, you know, what would the first one go, 2 or 3 issues with Red Hulk and
yeah.
Mole Man, you know, with like all these giant double page spreads in it. And, you know, this one, it just kind of moved along. It was kind of a fun story, which at least from my memory of it was how a lot of the Marvel team ups were.
Yeah. I just think that those tended to have a little bit more of a coherent plot. The plot here never raised kind of above the level of like a MacGuffin. It was there for the sake of well, we need something to motivate a, you know, bank robbery-ish sort of, you know, we need some villain to go fight. The humor.
I don't know how many of the original Marvel team ups you read, but I don't know there was a lot more than that in a lot of the early Marvel team ups.
Well, let me put it this way: I never really figured out what the people who were doing the robbery were after, how that got the other entity that came into play there. You know, the resolution felt kind of standard. You know, classic kind of Spidey type stuff. I guess it just felt too light. The humor was not overly clever, witty, or that funny. I mean, it never really made me chuckle or laugh out loud. So in that respect, it was just okay. To me, it read like somebody trying to ape the style of that era of comics without totally capturing it, at least for me. You know, I would compare this as being in the same vein as that kind of classic era of Spider-Man or the lighthearted, whimsical She-Hulk stories, either the John Byrne era or some of the more recent stuff, but it's kind of a swing and a miss. It wasn't bad, but it felt shallow, it felt like a fill-in issue, and really, this could have been released at almost any point in the last decade or so, and there's nothing wrong with that. Stories should have kind of a timeless quality to them, and I respect that, but for an insubstantial 22 pages at a $3.99 cover price, it left me wanting and not really in a good way. I mean, there was nothing wrong with it, but nothing I could say, oh, wow, you really ought to go read this issue.
So, well, I've come down in a very different way. It's like all those things that you didn't like about it were appealing to me. Since I'm not reading very many Marvel books, I kind of liked the fact that it wasn't, you know, tied into a whole bunch of things, that it was really kind of done in one and just fun. You know, Spider-Man meets She-Hulk and, you know, merriment ensues. I didn't need a whole lot more from it. And if they kept doing things like this, I will keep getting this book. If they go back to the 2-3 part, you know, drawn out long stories and all this kind of business, I didn't care for that too much.
And I'm not saying they should have tied this into everything under the sun over at Marvel or anything. It just felt like the complaints you've got about decompressed storyline and really not getting much in an issue apply to this, even though it was a single-issue story, because it almost felt like it was, I don't say marking time, but I was hoping for more substance.
I guess the differentiation I'd make between this and a decompressed story is this was just meant to be 22 pages of vacuous action.
And in that respect, it almost succeeded. It was only 20 pages.
Yeah, but, you know, whatever. I mean, and the, you know, decompressed story is a story that can be told in 20 pages, and they stretch it out to 120, you know, and just...
Yeah, an argument can be made this could have been a 8 to 10 page story back in, you know, Marvel Comics Presents back in the day, too. And again, there's nothing wrong with this. It's got good art. It's an okay way to pass the time. But that's all it is. If you try to think about it at all and say, you know, well, where's the plot? There are a couple of things in here that made me scratch my head as to why is this character saying that? Why is this happening? I mean, it felt like parts of the story were not on the page. Not major ones, and it wasn't like there was that much of a story to really worry about, but it left me wanting, like I said. And I could see how, you know, other people could really enjoy this. That there's nothing wrong with that. That's cool.
So I will give it a 4.
Wow. Okay. I'm giving it a 2.
So, you know, just from the standpoint of I wasn't buying this book, right? It's like I'll buy it now, and it raised my Marvel threshold by you know, around these days my Marvel buy just went up by like 10% or something in ordering an extra book. So,
okay then.
Something.
So,
give them their...
Clearly we have different views on this one.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's cool. I just... Surprised.
Now we've got an indie book. We might have different views on this one, too. We've got Mind the Gap, number one, from Image Comics. This is written by Jim McCann, art and cover by Rodan Escuejo and Sonia Oback. So Rodan Escuejo... he's the guy who would do the really spiffy covers on Morning Glories, and he's now doing all the art in this book, which is, I was very interested to see how that was going to come off, and I was very impressed with this book, both from the the art, and I liked seeing him do continuity type of art, but also from the standpoint of they're setting up a mystery in this one, and I like the fact that they are planting lots of little hints about it within the story itself, and they're also trying to establish a pretty clear timeline to where things are happening, and you know, having the clocks and other timepieces that just kind of naturally occur in the story make story sense. That, you know, if someone's showing a time on something, that is explicitly for a reason that it's supposed to have happened at that point in time on the in the continuity of this story. I'm not as convinced that as I read this on a monthly basis, I'll be able to keep all of that in my head. That's where, you know, the problem might occur. I also appreciate the fact that this was a very thick issue. I didn't count the pages.
46.
46 pages for $2.99. It was like, wow, it was quite a hefty chunk of comics they're giving you in this first issue.
Yeah, I almost read this last night, but it was getting late, and it's like, you know, this I could tell it was a thick comic. At that point, I wasn't sure how thick, and it's like, I'll wait. And I read it this morning and stuff. And, you know, I was curious about this because, again, the covers on Morning Glories are great. I was curious if this guy could handle interior art chores on a title and stuff. And, I mean, he can. He does so very well. The only page that had me thinking, wow, that was an interesting decision and maybe not a great way, was page 3, where we get kind of the as seen from the ceiling down point of view. But, I mean, they made the thing play and it kind of fit narratively what they were doing there. This was something that had a really strong lead up to the title page. And that title page was about 9 pages in. And, you know, like we said, this was an extra long 46 pages of story. So, you know, twice the, over twice the standard length these days. It's a, you know, a $2.99 book, right?
Yes,
$2.99. And man, it used the space well. Could they have tightened it up a little here and there? Well, who knows, maybe. But I didn't feel like it was the least bit padded or wasted space or anything like that. Things moved at a comfortable, natural progression. And to me, it was the equivalent of a pilot episode for like a serial mystery show. And we've seen a lot of those on TV where the pilot kind of sets up the here's the big thing that we're going to spend the rest of the season kind of going and deconstructing, figuring out, or whatever. This set up the characters, the mystery, gave what looks to be plenty of clues for us to dig into. The twist at the end was unexpected, and I think something of a game changer for the story. Because prior to those last two pages, I thought the story was kind of heading in one direction. Not going to say I knew exactly where it was telegraph. No, but it seemed like one kind of a story. But man, then those last two pages get just completely open up. Wow, there's a lot of possibilities for this that I hadn't been seeing. You know? So it's like, it started strong, it progressed strong, and it ended on a really intriguing note of giving me something to kind of chew on and think about while I'm waiting for that next issue. This is the kind of thing that I would compare with Morning Glories, and, you know, they're different stories, but similar kind of storytelling styles, if you will, with the ongoing serial narrative that reveals more over time and stuff like that. One of the challenges I personally have with Morning Glories is keeping enough of the story kind of in my head to make sense of those next installments. And like you were saying here, of your concern about is that going to be a problem over here, I could definitely see where it could be. Because are they going to be able to jog our memory appropriately when we need it without feeling like they're hitting us over the head or telegraphing or something like that? This issue really set itself up for potential future failure because it was really good, giving it a high bar to match, and because it's something that has that depth, and keeping that going on a monthly basis, both in terms of continuing the depth and keeping that alive in the minds of the audience, that's tough.
Yeah, I'd be really curious, you know, if they had done this as a 20-page or 22-page comic, you know, I really don't think I would have felt the same way about this. And I, you know, if any place that you could have cut it off around that point, you would have had to really seriously restructure the story to make it fit into a regular comic. And that's, I think Image has done a really good job on some of these books where they give an extra long, you know, it's Image and the creators, you know, have to pull together on that, right? But, you know, they've done a really good job on giving that extra long first issue to kind of set the hook. Whereas that was when we were talking about Exo Manowar, for instance, you know, I really thought that Valiant would have benefited from putting a little bit more into that first issue.
Well, I would put this in the same category as America's Got Powers that we talked about a couple of weeks back, where those extra pages really paid off. Because, again, it's like the difference between an hour-long pilot episode of a TV show or a two-hour. You can get a lot more done in those 2 hours that, you know, with this story, there was no convenient pausing point in the middle. And even if there had been, that first installment wouldn't have really sold you. Whereas for me, I was really sold on this as it was, you know?
Yeah,
this is something that I think on rereading I can get more out of.
I was just going to say, I mean, this was an exceptional comic. I just think that everything about this issue meshed together really well. You know, we had really nice art on it. The story was really well told, really nice pacing. Just the art, while being just extremely nice to look at, flowed really effectively from panel to panel. I thought that some of the visual effects, while, you know, I've seen visual effects like that with the blurs and fades and things come over looking as excessive in some stories, they seem to really work in the context of the storytelling the way they were used here. And the fact that they threw in those extra pages to make sure we got to a really good point where they, you know, really have me anyway, really excited about coming back for more of this. It just, everything was firing on this one, you know, that it gets a 5 out of 5 for me.
Oh yeah, same here. Totally a 5 out of 5 for me. I was very impressed with this. Like you said, on a production value basis, everything was top notch here. The writing, the art, the coloring, the visual effects, it was very smoothly done. I really appreciated how much story was in this issue. I mean, to me, this was the other end of the spectrum from Avenging Spider-Man number 7. There was just so much here, and it was a buck cheaper than that other story. I really want to see if they can keep going with this, if they've got a long-term game plan. I'm willing to bet they do, because they seem to have really thought out the crux of the story and stuff. I do not get the impression they're just winging it or anything. But, I mean, the challenge is, not only can they keep up the quality, but can they get us back in to the story successfully every issue, progress us through however many pages they're going to give us, and get us out on a, wow, that was really cool, I want to read more, kind of a note.
Right.
I got no reason to doubt that they can, other than the fact that's really a hard thing to do. Again, 5 out of 5, definitely want to read more of this. And really, I think this is, America's Got Powers and stuff. Image is putting out some really good stuff these days.
So we both read a couple of other number ones that came out this week. First one let's talk about maybe would be Trio by John Byrne from IDW.
I liked that. I thought that was kind of old school John Byrne in some respects. Some ways good, some ways just classic, and either you love it or you hate it. I personally really enjoyed it, but I think it could have been a stronger first issue. I think it really could have hooked me a bit more, but I like John Byrne. I like his stuff. I'm going to keep coming back.
Yeah, I felt similar. I think the problem that I had with it, and it was kind of a mixed emotions kind of thing, was I liked the characters Rock, Paper, and Scissors. They actually, you know, fit together quite nicely. They're a decent amount different than, you know, Rock is sort of like Thing, but Paper had some unique features that, you know, was a little different than Reed Richards.
Well,
you know,
Paper is Flat Man, Rock is Monolith from the Elementals, and then Scissors is what was the female kind of claw character from Robin at one point, one of the villains. I mean, these are things we've seen before.
Yeah,
but who cares? He meld them together into an interesting team,
you know. But at the same time, yeah, I had a little bit in the back of my mind caring, because it's just various points in the story, it just felt like, you know, this is something that I've seen before. You know, especially like that last page. I mean, it was just like Namor and...
Yes, yes. You know.
So, I mean, he's like going back to the well on certain things in here that just, he's taken a new spin on it, but it is, I hesitate to use the word, but I'm going to anyway. It just seemed a little derivative at certain points. That's okay. I mean, there's some newness to it and freshness, but at the same time, it did feel like there was some rerun type of stuff going on.
Well,
but I'm a big John Byrne fan when he's doing this kind of thing. So, and I'd rather see him do it with these newish kind of characters than when he, you know, when he did the, you know, his take on the Doom, his last, you know, go at the Doom Patrol and yeah, things like that. It's just doing it off on the side in a different universe is maybe something that goes down a little easier than when he's kind of making these callbacks with as sort of a reboot on existing characters.
Well, certainly anyone who loved his work on Fantastic Four back in the day and thinks he should do more of it, but man, just not with such a big team, maybe cut it down by a character. Well, guess what? You get your wish. I liked it, but, you know, he was the creator that really got me into the Marvel Universe. I was reading it. Alpha Flight that he was doing in Fantastic Four leading up to Secret War, which kind of got me into the rest of the Marvel Universe. So, but I think there are going to be other people who just don't like his work, and at which point, why bother even checking it out? But I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked it too.
Another number one that I think we both read was Higher Earth number one. I thought that was good, but not great. It didn't really sell me on the long-term nature of the title. You know, I don't think I've... I might have the second issue pre-ordered. I don't remember. It wasn't enough for me to either feel like I should put it on or take it off my list.
I liked the issue. It could have been... It could have blown my socks off a lot more than it did. I had more of a feeling like it was a lot of setup going on here. You know, because, you know, you're introducing who appear to be, you know, going to be the two main characters. And then you, at the end, you know, set up this alternate Earths kind of thing, and it'll kick into gear next issue. I was kind of the same kind of way. I'm not like completely convinced one way or another, but I liked it enough that I'm going to give it another issue or two before mm-hmm. I make the final decision one way or another.
That's cool. I read a couple others that I want to comment on just briefly. Hell Yeah, number three. The violence and gore is getting, I think, kind of needlessly excessive for my tastes, to the point I may end up dropping this title if it continues along that path.
I can see that. I read that one too.
Yeah.
I liked it, but you know, that stuff does not bother me.
It's not stuff I really need to be reading. And, you know, I like the story. I don't like the excessive nature of the graphics. Resurrection Man number 9 really should have had some indication inside front cover or on the cover or something that it takes place immediately after Suicide Squad number 9. I, alas, was reading those books in alphabetical order, having no better plan, so I read those two parts of their crossover in the wrong order, which really kind of, yeah, didn't hurt Resurrection Man so much, but really made that Suicide Squad feel kind of pointless, because I knew how, where it ended and why. That, to me, is just a bad way to handle a crossover. It should be hard to read them in the wrong order. Frankenstein number 9, Frankenstein's getting involved with the rot, which is happening over in Animal Man and Swamp Thing, and is actually on the trail of Animal Man, so it looks like they may try to tie that title into what's going on over there with those two titles. And then over at Marvel, Scarlet Spider number 5, that's the first post-Battle Scars sighting of Nick Fury and Agent Coulson of S.H.I.E.L.D. Single panel cameo, but, you know, they're going to be people who didn't read Battle Scars, who read Scarlet Spider, I think, you know, not maybe a ton of readers, but still thinking, well, what's happening here? And being a little confused.
Mm-hmm.
That was that. I've read everything else from this week, but those are the only ones I really wanted to, you know, say anything about.
The two that I read, which were number ones, is I read the Fury Max, which I liked. It's kind of in the vein of, well, I mean, it's a Max book, you know, so you got some language and things like that. But it's Nick Fury in pre-Vietnam War Southeast Asia in the 50s. And it was a pretty good story. I'm going to keep on getting this one. I liked it. And the other one was from IDW, Night of 1,000 Wolves by Bobby Kurnow with art by Dave Walker. Art was really nice. I'm not completely sure what the deal is with this yet. In this, it's a 3-issue series, so I'll get the rest of the series. But the setup could have been a little more clearly articulated in the first issue. But it's a short series, so it's more like, you know, read it as a single story kind of thing would be my recommendation on that one. The art's really nice to look at, though.
Cool.
You would not want to get this book, by the way.
I am well aware of that. Yeah, there are certain books that are pretty clear when I'm looking through in previews, both the Fury Max and that IDW one, where it's like, you know, not for me.
A lot of wolves ripping out people's throats kind of business going on. So
I try to avoid that kind of stuff. And again, that may take me off a book like Hell Yeah that I'm otherwise enjoying, because I think they're doing, you know, needlessly gratuitous stuff there.
Yeah. Well, in this case, I would say that it pretty much fits with the kind of story that they're telling. I didn't find it particularly gratuitous in The Night of a Thousand Wolves. It's just that's the kind of story that they're telling. You got these wolves and they're menacing these people, and, you know, anyway, I liked it. It was a good story. But, you know, it's the kind of thing that if you get it in trade, that'll probably be a good way to consume the story. Also got Frankenstein Alive #1 from IDW. This was a nice book. I mean, if you like Bernie Wrightson art, you know, got a Steve Niles story. The story held together pretty good. The art's just, if you like Bernie Wrightson, you absolutely need to be picking this one up. It's horror, but it's not gory, you know. So it'd be one that could be read by you, but I don't think you'd probably like it just on general principles. But, you know, it wouldn't be because it was like overly gory.
Right. No, I get what you're saying.
But for fans of Bernie Wrightson, they should definitely keep their eyes out for that one.
Cool. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Does it for me.
Cool.
And for anybody who's going to be attending the Phoenix Comic Con from May 24th to the 27th, that's over Memorial Day weekend. It's going Thursday through Sunday. I would encourage you to come find one of the tracks that I am moderating. I'm actually running all the fan-focused events there. I'll actually be physically moderating about 11 tracks there. I'll be doing the comic book trivia sessions on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'll be doing the sketch-offs on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the artist's jam-off that's happening on Saturday. I'll be on the podcasting panel on Sunday. I'll be just all around, but if you can go to one of the sessions that I am on the schedule on the web that I'm moderating, come up and say hi. I'd love to hear it. If you're a listener, see you face-to-face, shake your hand, and thank you for listening, and we can chat. So if you're going to be at the Phoenix Comic Con, look me up.
Join us next week when we discuss DC Universe Presents #9 from DC, Fantastic Four #605.1 from Marvel, and Dancer #1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.